If you want to get through the question, a comment, a topic, today is the Power Hour. Go ahead and press 1 on your phone. The quicker you do that, the better your chances of getting through. So let's go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Today is the Power Hour. Joining me from Pittsburgh Power, I've got Ethan and John, and this is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything engine, troubleshooting, performance, fuel economy, modifications, upgrades, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a couple of minutes. I want to bring on Ethan and John. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, hi, Kevin.
Hey, great to have you guys here. John, I got those links you sent me. You know, it's interesting because a couple months ago, I kept coming on the air saying, you know, I read a ton of trucking news and I was just bored out of my skull. There's just not a lot going on in trucking that's worth talking about. It's not, sometimes it's not a real dynamic industry, but boy, the technology has just been pretty exciting lately.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. That particular stuff that I sent you there, you know, we've got all the noise about the Nikola and Tesla and all the other stuff happening. Meanwhile, this fella, right, he's been quietly going about this for a while. And he's got stuff that's actually out and working. So I find him interesting. Even though he's not over the road yet, I got a feeling that that's that can't be far off of its horizon.
Yeah, you know, I spent last week at a conference. It was an industry conference, mostly for brokers. But they brought in a couple key deals. Keynote speakers. I did a keynote on one day, and on the other day, they had two analysts. One guy's kind of on the financial side, and the other guy is almost kind of like, you know, where is the industry going kind of stuff. And they had some really interesting topics. One of them absolutely believes that autonomous trucks are coming faster than we think, and they're not going to have drivers in the cab. And he had some really interesting points about why he believed that was the way it was going. And I put a lot of stuff together. I spent the whole weekend talking about this, that if you look at the future of the industry, he talked about, and this was really cool. I went back and looked at this. This goes for any industry. They even had, there's a guy that came up with this whole cycle and proves it in every industry, that there is a major disruption in every industry about every 30 years, give or take a little bit. And in the trucking industry, I went back and looked. 1920s, the diesel engine. Huge change in the way we moved freight. 1950s, the highway system was built. Another major change in how we moved freight. The 80s, biggest disruption ever, it was deregulation. Well, here we are 30 years later, and the disruptor the time. Yeah. And in all of those, we are talking huge changes to the industry. Now, I heard stories about the 50s because my grandfather was an owner-operator before there was an interstate system. And to get from one side of the country to the other took weeks. So the interstate system was a big change. Now, in the 80s, I do know, prior to deregulation, there were lots of big truckload carriers. After deregulation, only three of those made it through. But we created a whole bunch of new big players, and that's what happens with these disruptions. Companies just literally disappear. Brand new companies come out of nowhere, and we start that cycle all over again. So the disruptor this time is technology. Well, I looked at, you know, with everything they predicted, and it's not good news for a driver, for an employee driver, because this technology will get rid of them. And I went through a whole list of things that go away when you don't have a driver anymore. The entire truck changes. We've talked about that. You don't need a cab. You don't. There's all kinds of things you don't need in the truck anymore. Safety. Everybody's worried about safety, but safety gets much better without a driver. The driver is always the part that fails. And people think, oh, no, you're going to have a driver as a backup. This guy laid out an absolute case. He said, you people who think like that have it completely backwards. Right now, the technology is becoming the backup for the driver because he fails so often. So we have automatic braking and lane departure warnings. And, you know, we're all that technology is already on the road and it's the backup for the driver. Once technology is, you know, really put in place and we get through all the regulations and the fear, the driver would be pointless. And people said, oh, no, look at airlines. We still have pilots and we've had autopilot forever. Yeah, that's because there's a real simple explanation for this. Depending on the size of the plane, there could be 500 people on that plane. First off, they're not getting on if there's no pilot. You're never going to overcome that fear. And if something went wrong, you have 500 lives at stake. They're all going to die in a plane crash. If the plane happens to crash into a populated area, you've got a major disaster. But if we put an autonomous truck on the road with no driver and it does fail and crash, you know, the results aren't going to be that bad. We crash trucks every minute of every day right now. Nobody seems to have a big problem with that. So the way people are thinking about this, I posted on Facebook and people have it wrong. But here's the good news. Even though drivers have a pretty short lifespan, I mean, and nobody really knows the time right now. I looked at a lot of things and owner operators, especially with their own authority, who really get the new technology and know how to use it to their advantage. I'm not talking about autonomous trucks, I'm talking about all kinds of other cool technology. They have a very exciting future right now.
Oh, definitely.
So really, really interesting. I had a week where I thought my head was just going to explode. There's so much going on.
I think within it all lie opportunity for all of us and drivers included. There'll be other, you know, other things they'll be doing. I think it's all going to be for the better eventually.
You know, and even drivers.
But I'm a fan of technology.
When I say the driver's lifespan is short, I'm talking in relative terms. And the other thing to remember is, if you put yourself in the top 25% of any industry, so if you're a driver and you stay healthy, you keep your driving record clean and you're just good with people, you know, just an all around good driver, you've got a much longer lifespan and a lot of cool opportunities. I think it's the other 75% that should either figure out how to get into the 25 or start looking for another career.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
So that was my week. What have you guys got going on?
Not a whole lot. Ethan had something he wanted to start with, I think.
Yeah. The one thing, and I've been seeing this a lot lately, especially on older trucks, the 98 to 2002 range, but the D-Deck 3s and 4s, whenever people are doing, especially like an in-frame, the Detroit wiring harnesses after about, 18 or 20 years tend to get very old. And the wires get brittle. And then what happens is you move everything around when you're rebuilding it because you got to disassemble everything. And when you put it back together, you oftentimes find that there's a problem in the wiring harness now all of a sudden. And that's, basically because you've moved everything out of its happy spot there. And most people, and the Detroit harnesses are the cheapest, the least expensive ones. I recommend changing the engine sensor harness if you do an in-frame rebuild, especially if you've got, a 15 to 18 year old truck.
What's the cost of replacing the harness?
Anywhere it ranges. The Detroits are what, $250, $300 that range?
The Detroit stuff's pretty inexpensive.
The Cat and the Cummins get a little bit more pricey. I mean, they can be up to the $800 range. But if you're spending, in frame cost anywhere from 18 to $28,000, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, somewhere in that range. They get up around 30 pretty quickly.
Yeah, and you're looking, after you do this, not to have any problems. You don't want to be back in the shop at all. It's a peace of mind. If you have the little extra cash at the time, you might as well throw one on there. It's going to save you time in the long run and money.
I would add to that and say it shouldn't even be an option in your mind. I think you would be crazy not to replace it. All it would take is one problem that you have to go back in there and try to track down, and you're going to spend a whole lot more money and lose time and revenue and all the other stuff. So I think that's a
good advice. Yeah, go ahead. And what happens if it's a oil pressure sensor that fails and shuts you down in the middle of the road? Then you acquire a tow bill at the same time.
Yeah, the cost can add up quick. Great, great piece of advice. And I would really tell people it shouldn't even be an option. Just do it. Well, there's the music. We're going to get to a break. And it sounds like when we get back, we're going to get right to your calls and questions. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get right to your phone calls. We're off to Wisconsin. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thanks for taking my call. And obviously, thanks for all the great knowledge that you guys share with us. We appreciate it. So, two questions for you. I've got a 2012 International ProStar. Unfortunately, with the Max Force engine, but it's treated me well so far. I have difficulty getting it into gear from a dead stop. Just likes the grind, almost feels like the clutch is completely gone. I took it into a TA service center a couple weeks back, and they told me that the hydraulic clutch, it would need like a brake clutch adjustment, and that it looks like somebody greased it too much on my last B service. To just keep running it out after a couple thousand miles, it would improve. And here we are about 6,000 miles later.
That definitely sounds like a clutch. Clutch brake needs to be clean and dry if possible. You may want to replace it. They've got a serviceable one that you could replace from underneath. The friction surfaces on that, if it were contaminated with grease, it probably would not work so well. And even the hydraulic, I believe you have to have, there's some adjustment involved on the clutch itself. Generally, they use a self-adjusting clutch with those, but that may be hanging up as well. So you need to have someone take a look underneath and watch to make sure you're getting good contact between the clutch brake and the front face of the gearbox there. Because there's enough inertia to keep those gears spinning around. If the brake's not working, you're really going to struggle to drop it into gear.
Okay, perfect. My second question is actually last week I was headed out to Seattle and just kind of going through the mountains. I started hearing a squealing sound and it progressively got a little bit louder, almost as if a serpentine belt was slipping, that kind of squeal or whistle. I really haven't seen much of a difference in performance, but it seems to happen when I'm under load or putting a load on the engine. I could be empty, climbing hill, maybe put the accelerator down. Just kind of putting a load on the engine seems to make it start to whine. So any thoughts there?
Yeah, you've got a boost leak there. You're going to find that one of your intake hoses is either got a loose clamp on it or sliding out from under the clamp because of what it'll do. Or potentially, depending on what engine is in this truck?
It's the Max Force 13.
The Max Force. Okay, I'm not that familiar with it, but often intake gaskets, when they fail, will act like a reed, like on a reed instrument almost, whenever it starts to bleed that air out. They'll make quite an interesting squealing noise, just like a cornet or a saxophone. So take a look at intake gaskets.
Leak on the intake or somewhere in the intake or
Or one of the hoses on the way over there, between the turbo and the charge air cooler or the charge air cooler and the intake. But examine all that, or if you've got a shop nearby that can do a smoke test for you, is the quickest way to find the problem.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's head north of the border. We're going to go to Ontario. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hello, gentlemen. How are your day?
Good.
Good. Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Hey, I was in there, into the shop a little less than a month ago, 2004 ISX, 1,000,003 plus on it, smoking. We did a dyno test. They did air leak test, fixed a wire problem on the EGR to keep it from derating a little bit. The truck is running fantastic. Got, more power than it did and more torque than it did in 900,000 miles. But the problem I'm still having, she smokes when she drinks. If I get on that accelerator and smoke just likes to roll out of there, I mean, it's not super bad, but you can definitely see it. And my question is, will the power box eliminate that?
No. I know some women like that smoke when they drink, but... No, the power box will not eliminate that. You really shouldn't be smoking. What year is the ISX?
2004. It has the manifold. It has the FAS. It has an aftermarket intake that eliminates the EGR.
Okay. Yes, we could probably do a little work on the programming to eliminate the smoke. Or make sure, like the last caller, though, make sure you don't have a boost leak somewhere, because that should not be, unless it's really... turned up quite a bit. It shouldn't be smoking too badly. We don't see many smoke issues with ISX.
Yeah, you guys did the boost test on it and said everything was fine at the time.
It was tight then? Okay.
I didn't know what our next step would be then. I wanted to run it first and see how she did.
But the power is good.
Oh, power is fantastic. This old girl runs like a scalded dog.
What kind of temperature do you see on your pyrometer?
I don't have a pyrometer. I run light freight. It's run light freight for 900,000 miles. So.
What color is the smoke?
It's black, definitely black.
Okay, so it's fuel.
But only
it's fuel related.
Goosing it.
Huh. Yeah. So I wonder who's, did we program it for you?
You did not program it, no. But the only thing we did, like I said, the boost test and the fix the wire on the EGR and then did the dyno test. And, it doesn't smoke real bad, but you can definitely notice it going down the road when I'm getting on there.
Okay. Whoever did the work on it to remove the... EGR had to do some work on the computer too, so there's a program in there probably that's causing the smoke issue, and it probably wasn't. It was at a bit of a derate before, so you didn't notice. So when we repaired the wire, now you're getting full fuel and you've got the smoke now. You ought to try and get back in here and let us work on the programming a little bit. We could probably eliminate that smoke for you.
Okay, I can go that route then. I appreciate it, guys.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, let's head off to Kentucky. Steve, welcome to the program. It's your turn.
Hey, how y'all doing today, guys?
Good.
Good, how are you?
All right, great. Hey, I got a question for you. I have a 95 Kenworth that I've been restoring here lately, and I changed the oil on it and change the fuel filters on it. And this thing, I pretty much, I'm gone during the week because I work for another company. But this thing sits in my building all the time. I changed the oil, changed fuel filters. Make a long story short, when I started it up, I thought it was sucking air and thought I had a bad fuel filter, a cat filter. It's a 34.6 cat E model, 5EK. And I thought it was sucking air. And I couldn't get the air out of the system, so I took it to a shop who was highly recommended around there. And the guy told me that my number two injector was weak. And is that possible just from changing the fuel filter? I noticed the cat filter, the ring around it was broke loose after I just spun it off to see if it had any, you know, make sure it had fuel in it. And it had plenty of fuel in the canister, but the ring around it was broke. And I was thinking maybe it sucked a little air and screwed that injector up. Is that possible?
No, a little air leak's not going to kill an injector. No, definitely not. And nor will that injector won't cause it to not to lose its prime either. So yeah, I think you've got two separate issues there. If you struggled to, you know, to maintain the prime or to for the thing to pick up fuel, that is probably completely opposite of the, or not opposite, but separate of the injector issue.
Well, it was just it started. It never would. I never had to give it ether the whole time. It would start and it just sit there. But you can tell it had a little of a thud, and it didn't do that, you know, before I put these, before I changed the fuel filter. It sat there and run fine, and I ran it, you know, several times. I ran it maybe about a week before I changed the oil and the fuel filters, and all of a sudden, I changed these fuel filters, and it seemed like, it, to me personally, it was just need to crack the, you know, the fuel lines and make sure I didn't have a class fuel line. But this guy is pretty much swearing that it's an injector.
How old is the injectors in this thing?
It's about 4 years old. What I did, I did an outer frame, about four years ago, and I just swapped the injectors over to the new engine new reman that I put in there.
Okay, so the injectors were used when you did your outer frame.
Yes.
Okay, so how many miles are on the injectors total?
I would say about 600,000 on those injectors.
I mean, it's possible one to go bad just from, you know, time. I mean, it could just be a coincidence that you changed the oil in the fuel filter and the injector just happened to go at the same time.
Yeah, well, I was just having a hard time believing it just from, because like I said, I started up way before I even changed the oil and the fuel on it. And sit there, ran fine, and then I just shut it off and changed the oil and the fuel filters, and this is the product that I got afterwards. So I was just trying to see what you and Kevin and them would thought about that, and so I wouldn't be so crazy about thinking I'm going crazy about this simple operation.
No, I think it's just a coincidence there.
Sounds like you might just need an injector. Yep.
I agree. I hate when that happens, too. You know, we always want to think one thing caused another, and most of the time it does, but it's that time when it just happens to be a coincidence that can make us a little crazy. We'll be right back after this break with more stuff. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me answering your calls and questions, and we're going to get right back to them. We're going to head off to Oklahoma. Weldon, welcome to the program.
Good day, guys. Got a 1998 Mac. It's a CH613 with a 465 in it. Any suggestions there? We just did an in-frame, and it's running good. I don't really have seem to have any issues, but just anything we can do performance-wise.
Now, we haven't got anything for the Mac. We don't have a power box for that. We've got, it's not performance, but we could do a, I believe we have a balancer for that engine. Obviously, the other products, the fast fuel, you know, system would help that. The fleet air filters would definitely help you out a little bit. We could have your manifold ported, polished, and coated, which would also be of some help. But we haven't got any programming or power box or any other performance enhancements for the Mac. No, we haven't got a turbo for it yet. No, we've somehow, I don't know, I don't believe we purposely steered clear of Macs. We've just not had enough call for it here. Yeah, you know, we haven't had that many people call asking for Mac.
So well, like I said, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fine, but just I was just looking for a little bit more horsepower.
Oh, always. I get that.
And
yeah, I appreciate that.
And just right out of the box, it's you know, it's just a, you know, just an older Mac, and it gets 7.5 just right on the button, just all the time, driving 57 miles an hour, and you know, not doing anything aerodynamic or anything to the truck. It's done really well for it.
Yeah, you know, John,
yeah, I wish we had something for you.
I've been saying for years, and I didn't realize this until after the fact, like a couple years, I was doing some accounting and going back through numbers. We had fuel gauges up and we were tracking things. And I went back and started noticing those late 90s, early 2000 Macs. I think that was a very underappreciated engine. We had some of those that were getting 8 miles to the gallon with no modifications, and nobody was trying. It was just, and I thought, that's got to be a fluke. And I started talking about it on the air, and I'd have guys call me and go, oh, no, I get 7.5 to 8 all the time. We haven't done a thing to it. And I thought, wow. I wonder what would have happened if we really would have focused on that engine and built a truck for fuel economy with one of those. There just aren't that many of them in the over-the-road market. They're much more of a local vocational truck.
For sure, and there are a lot of them
for
around.
Sure,
here,
and there are a lot of them around.
We weren't able to do much with them here.
Yeah. So interesting, but you there?
Yeah, my headset's going wacky here. I get an echo. It's interesting. I don't know what's going on with it. I think I'm back to normal now.
Okay. Let's go to Tennessee, get to a call. We got a bunch of them. We're going to talk to Mike. It's your turn.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I got my 2016 T660 Sestero glider, 12.7 Detroit, 13 speed. And I called in a pass about it. Finally got it broken in, got about 28,000 miles on it. That's running great, not burning hardly any oil at all, up to about a gallon every 10,000 miles. So running good. And just had a quick question. I was heading out to Fort Worth on a long run last week. And when I got there, I noticed my fuel pump. I've got the fast fuel system on the truck. Sounded like the fuel pump was cavitating and very loud. And I noticed on my fuel filter gauge here in the KW, it's usually at about between four and five on the restriction, and for some reason it was down around 1 or 2, and I could hear the fuel pump cavitating, and like maybe voltage was going up and down. And so I went on my brake and I high leveled the truck, and when I got back it seemed to go away, and it seems to be back now. When I turn the key to the on position, I can hear the pump and it runs nice and smooth. And when I start the truck is when I'll hear it's a little louder and I'll hear that cavitating. I just want to see if you guys had an opinion, maybe a clogged filter, or what would you guys think?
Well, with the drop in restriction and the noise and the cavitation, I've got to believe you might have been pulling air somewhere. Did you have are your tanks returning evenly, and there's no chance you'd pulled some air from one side or the other? Was there?
Yeah, I was on, I guess, about half tanks of fuel.
Okay. And do they seem to return evenly? So even
Yeah, you know, it seems to run good. I don't have any acceleration problems or anything like that. But I haven't really checked underneath it, see what might be going on up under there. Figure I'd give you guys a call first.
If the FAS grabbed a gulp of air from if your tanks were a little lower than half and maybe not returning full evenly, could have pulled air from one side or the other, whichever the low side was, and with the FAS will return that right back to the tank, and you'll hear that cavitating noise, and you'll hear the speed change on the pump, but it'll only supply clean fuel to the engine, so you won't feel it in the way the engine works. So the FAS may have just been doing its job, but keep an eye inside of your tanks. You've only got a gauge on one side, and sometimes, depending on how these things are plumbed, they won't return perfectly even. So
it seems like it's back now. Whenever I'm running the truck now, it seems like it's back permanently now. And the guys at MHC, when they ordered the truck, they had ordered some of the six drug wires I've seen with the dual fuel gauges, but for some reason they didn't order mine with that. And I had no idea when I was ordering the truck that you could even get the fuel and then the fuel two gauge, which would have been a big help, because this thing will be showing dead empty, and I'll still have 75 to 80 gallons in the tanks when I go to fill it up. So it's a big guessing game when you're actually on empty. Can you actually add that second fuel gauge to the Kenworth, or do you have to change out the fuel tank, or is that something that's a major job? Do you know? Or
there, I'm not positive. That would take a little research there. I've never had that question before, but.
Keep an eye on both tanks, though, with get yourself a yardstick or something and check them every now and then to see that it's returned evenly. Something as simple as a clogged vent on one of the tanks will cause them to not return evenly from the FAS. And the FAS moves a tremendous volume of fuel aside from what goes to the engine. So if they're for some reason not returning evenly, you'll actually end up pulling air out of one or the other at some point and still think you have, plenty of fuel on your gauge. So. But keep an eye on that. Okay. It sounds to me like it got a lump of air, and that was it. So you said it runs smoothly now, though. You don't hear that cavitation anymore?
Actually, when I turn the key to the on position, it runs smoothly when the engine is actually off. But now when I start the motor, I'm hearing it all the time, basically, when I'm idling. I can still hear it. It's better than normal, for sure.
Okay, I'll check your voltage, too. Make sure you've got good voltage at the motor. That connector, I know, on the FAS has been prone to create some resistance and drop voltage at the electric motor on the FAS.
Okay, sounds good. So check voltage and check for clogged screens and then make sure to check my levels. Okay, sounds good.
You
got to
keep an eye on the levels. No problem.
All right, thanks, buddy.
All right, let's. We're going to get started on another call. We'll probably carry it through the break. Freddie in Ohio, go ahead.
Hello, thank you. Three quick questions here. When you are cold and you start your day, is it bad for the engine or the transition to start off driving cold, or is it better to warm up, bring the engine to a somewhat operating temperature?
Well, I prefer operating temperature myself, but some say they get away with the cold warm-up. I personally don't agree with that. I'd rather see it warmed up a bit before you head down the road.
Cummins says you can just start and go. Like the new Cummins, I was reading off some of their information, and you can on the new ISXs, they tell you just to start and go, and the engine will automatically increase the power as it warms up.
Oh.
But there's also emissions reasons behind that, because moving engine produces less emissions and overall time idling is reduced.
What I've always recommended on warm up and cool down. Warm up, for example, what I always like to do is if I'm pretty much ready to go, get the truck started, and while it idles, I like to do that one final walk around. Get out of the truck. Just make sure everything looks good, nothing major, but look under, look around, make sure everything's fine. Get back in. By the time you idle your way out of the truck stop, you don't need to be grabbing three gears on the way out of the truck stop. Get to the ramp and start to accelerate. Most of the time you're at operating temperature by then. Same thing with shutdown. You just got to watch those times when you're pulling a long hill, come into a rest area, and everything's hot, or the opposite. Start off in a rest area, take off up a hill. I would agree that bringing it up to operating temperature helps, but it usually doesn't take a very long time. Let's get to a break. We'll come back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Hey, if you want to join us on our podcast and our recording, it's real simple. Send a text to 99000. Text the word listen. That'll put you on the list. And every time we're doing a podcast or a recording, we'll send you a text message about 15 minutes early, and you can join us. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. We're going to go to Mississippi this time. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. This is for John and Ethan. I've had work done on. I got a VDEC 5 6 Series Detroit, and they've done some work on it for me before. What I'm curious about, I got $1.1 million on it, and this year I had the head pressure test and everything is all good, but I'm getting losing about a gallon every 8,000-9,000 miles on the blow by, and I was wondering if Pittsburgh can do the rods and mains and piston kit without having to just do a complete end frame.
Oh, you know what? Hold on. I think I got to bring those guys back in. I was sitting here thinking about it, and I wasn't paying attention. Sorry, guys. Go ahead.
I didn't think I heard the beep. All right. This is John. How are you? This is John here, too. How's it going?
Pretty good. Right? So it's going real good.
Good.
It's doing great.
Yeah.
I never get back with you on that transmission, though, but.
Well, I never found the number. I said I should have called you and let you know that. Bruce and I came up with it one day, and it's on a post-it note or something somewhere. Neither of us could find the numbers again. And I need to go pull through all the data on the Eaton website. They've got a whole spreadsheet of all the gear ratios available, and I have to figure out exactly what it was again. But if you just need us to do the bottom end, you just want to do cylinder kits, we could do that for you. I don't have a problem with that. What we'd do is get the head pressure tested, clean it up, and put it right back on if you're confident that it's okay, and if your budget doesn't allow for you, we could easily just do cylinder kits for you. That's no problem.
Okay. Yeah, because I wasn't sure about that. Like I said, in the spring, I had the head gasket went out on me, and the shop I was at, they sent the head off, had it pressure tested. They said it was all good, but it's always leaked some in the blow by, since I've had it.
Yep. And yeah, we can easily do that for you.
All right. That's what I just didn't want to pay for a complete reman.
we'll do whatever your budget allows. Don't worry.
All right. Sounds like a plan. We've got a bunch of calls, so let's get right to them. Let's go to Indiana. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, Pittsburgh Power guys. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, last month I was over at Pittsburgh Power. They put a shorty exhaust on my 6N Z-Cat. Fantastic. I mean, I'm thrilled, but that's not why I'm calling. What I'm calling is I also bought a set of these filter magnets, and I've been getting conflicting opinions, and I wanted from the horse's mouth, either horse makes no difference, and I want to know, in somebody's opinion, having those magnets on my filter, will that affect my fuel samples, and why?
You mean your oil samples?
I mean my oil samples, I'm sorry, right.
I've got an opinion on this. Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but the magnets are catching bigger particulate matter than we're looking at in the when we do the oil samples. So we're talking parts per million, and you're getting the magnets are going to catch, you know, bigger chunks, shall we say, you know, if there's something floating
around. Why wouldn't they catch the smaller ones is what I'm wrestling with in my head.
Well, the iron, the sample is going to go down, but would you rather have that iron rolling around in your engine so you can know about it on your sample meanwhile doing damage, or just you're still going to catch in your sample if something's coming apart?
Yeah, okay. I wonder if Kevin's got an opinion on it.
I do, and it's changed probably three times since I saw this product. So I'll give you my final. I'll give you my now that we watch. When I first saw it, I thought, wow, what a great idea. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, wait a minute. If it starts pulling all the iron out of the sample and we don't see the iron buildup, we might miss a problem. So I thought, that's not good. But then when we started looking at the samples, it's not pulling all the iron out, not by any stretch of the imagination. And the reason it's not is because it's emulsified. The really, really fine stuff that we measure in an oil sample, the parts per million, it's not coming out of the oil. It's moving through that filter fast enough. It's emulsified into the oil. It's not going to come out. So I don't see any big change in the sample, nothing that would cause me any concern now that I've looked at them. And, you know, I've always said the iron buildup, because it's so fine, if it's making it through the OPS filter, it's not causing any problem in the engine. But so then I was thinking, well, the magnets are kind of, they're not hurting anything, but what are they doing? And John just mentioned.
Right.
Then I thought about the bigger stuff, that this is such a cheap insurance policy that if this grabs the bigger particles, that's really what we're looking for. So I've gone from it's a great product, it's an unnecessary product, to it's just a really good, inexpensive insurance policy, and I like it.
Wonderful. Perfect. I love the explanations because every time I asked why, I couldn't get an answer, and that worked for me. Thanks for your time, guys.
It's a serious chicken or the egg discussion almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I changed my mind three times, which I'm prone to do. But, you know, sometimes you get new information or you get a chance to think through something or you see results. And in this one, I, you know, started watching samples that I knew were coming from trucks that had it, and it's not making a big enough change in the sample that it concerned me at all, but the idea of catching the bigger particles is a great idea.
Yeah, that's the stuff that's rolling around and they're doing the damage, so let's keep the damage from happening or increasing.
Yeah, exactly. So let's go to Tennessee. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, guys. Hey, I was just calling to get some information about the glider I just recently purchased. It's got a Detroit Series 60 in it. And Landstar is asking that I prove to them what the engine family number is and the manufacturer date of the engine. I'm not sure where to find that information so that I can snap a picture of it and send it to Landstar. Can you help me with this?
Who built the engine?
It's a Detroit.
Is it a Detroit reman?
I believe it is. On the label that I did get a picture of, it says Detroit Diesel Remanufacturing East.
Okay, so the serial number should start with an 06RE number then.
On this label, there is, it says unit 06RE.
That's the engine
is
serial number.
Is that the number they're asking for?
No, that's the engine serial number. Now, on the valve cover or on, a lot of times, right there on the side of the block under the intake manifold, there's a tag. It's engine family is either going to be on the valve cover or on the tag under the intake manifold.
Okay.
They are all required to have that labeled on there.
Okay.
And being it's a reman from Detroit, they would have it. And I would check the valve cover. I think it's going to be on there.
It should be on the valve cover sticker, yes.
Okay, now I think I've taken a picture of the valve cover sticker. I mean, it gives me a date on here of 3/20/13. Would that be right for a glider, though, for an engine manufacturer?
Detroit, yeah, they build them, and, you know, the date is the date that they put it together, not the date that it was installed.
Okay, so this is a 2014 glider that I got. So this code on the bottom, that, you know, the way I read it here, it just says SO, then it's S01294090012 spec R2352635 3F, and then that date of 3/20/13. Is this what they're looking for?
What they're looking for is actually should be clearly labeled on the valve cover. It should say engine family.
Engine family.
Yeah, or okay. Right along that line. It's something just like what they're asking for. I would take a close look at that sticker.
Okay. I don't see anything that says engine family on the sticker that I took a picture of. But it seemed like it was... that I've already sent it to them, and they just said, what about the family? And
there's the music. I've got, you know, one of my quick answers for you. Find a friend with one like it and take a picture of theirs. We're all out of time. I've got to get out of here, so we will see you next time. Thanks to Ethan and John and the team at Pittsburgh Power for helping us out. Thanks for all the listeners. Great questions. We'll see you next time. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. Follow us on Facebook. Join us for the next show. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thanks, everyone. All right. Thanks, everybody. Hey, tomorrow, join us. We've got an exciting lineup for Destination Health. In the first hour, we will be talking about the new FIT test, our food intolerance test. We've got some of the results back, and we'll tell you how you can do that. Great stuff there. And in the second hour, we'll have a special guest that's going to be talking about some fitness and some really, really cool workout stuff he's developed just for truck drivers being on the road. And, impressive guys run Ironmans all over the world. He's got all kinds of medals for swimming, and he did it all while he was driving a truck full time. So join us for that tomorrow. We'll see you then. Thanks.